Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o, 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 hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-hey-hey-o, hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey-hey-hey-o, hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. We are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. We are here to love ourselves, to love one another, to love our surroundings, to love, to love, to love. Nasan aniva nijone go shabotya, nijone go shabotya. Hey, 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 yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, 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 yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Way. Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kiddishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, don't,
Navajo singer-songwriter Louis Goni from his Canyon Records CD entitled Sacred Mountains, Meditation Songs from the Diné. That particular song was entitled Children of Tomorrow, an honoring song to our future generations, the youth. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a presentation by an international youth leader, Mr. Dumisani Nayoni from Zimbabwe, Africa. Dumisani Nayoni is a youth activist concerned for the future well-being of our planet Earth. Born and raised in Zimbabwe, Africa, Dumisani has a range of experience in promoting youth involvement in important global affairs. These include the environment, sustainable development, eradication of poverty and hunger, peace, and economic social justice. Issues we of Yad Kiddushi Native Center are also very much concerned about. Dumisani Nayoni has been an advisor to many international organizations and projects. He has participated as a youth leader in a number of world conferences. Much of his work is building and coordinating global action networks, facilitating symposiums and youth initiatives. Several examples include his work with the Earth Charter, Echo Ventures International, and Taking IT Global. I had the honor to first meet Dumisani in the spring of 2002 at a wonderful Earth Charter conference. The symposium's theme, Teaching for the Environment and Higher Education, the Promise of the Earth Charter, focused on how the Earth Charter can be an important part of university curricula. This academic forum was more commonly referred to as the Chewunke Symposium, named after the geographic location of the 2002 conference, where Dumasani served as an Earth Charter International Youth Representative. The Earth Charter is a declaration of fundamental principles for building a just, sustainable, and peaceful global society. Four basic concepts of the Earth Charter exemplify the values and principles of global interdependence and shared responsibility for the well-being of all life on Earth. They are respect and care for the community of life, ecological integrity, social and economic justice, and democracy, nonviolence, and peace. We here at Yadkidishi Native Center express this concern for the biosphere as having reverence for life through Earth ethics. In my native language, we say Kinon Wontakwasin to all of our relations. Most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know about the Earth Charter from our longtime coverage and promotion of the Earth Charter through our worldwide broadcasts. They include a five-part series featuring keynote speakers and panel presentations of the Chewunke Conference, my special interview series with internationally recognized educator and Earth Charter scholar Dr. Peter Corcoran, Wolf Mountain Radio interview series with Beatrice Schultes, director of the Earth Charter's Indigenous Peoples Program, Wolf Mountain Radio interview with former Earth Charter Associate Director, ecologist Geraldo Berdowski, our coverage of the first United States Earth Charter Community Summit and nationwide telecast, Wolf Mountain Radio's interview with Earth Charter activists Donna Roberts, Rosie Emery, and Renaud Richard, and Wolf Mountain Radio's Earth Charter program, Planetary Vision, that shared my interview with Stephen Rockefeller and focused on UNCED, the UN Conference on Environment and Development, the precursor to the Earth Charter. Wolf Mountain Radio is honored to include this program featuring Dumasani Nayoni as part of our continued promotion of the Earth Charter. Dumasani Nayoni's presentation was hosted by Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environmental and Sustainability Education. His presentation, quote, "Environmental Challenges, Local Activism and Global Affairs," unquote, was one of the center's Rachel Carson Distinguished Lecture Series program. Dumasani visited the campus as part of FGCU's celebration of National Environmental Education Week, co-sponsored by the University Environment Club and the Power of One student organization. I have had the privilege to serve as a member of Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education's Board of Advisors, which I was appointed to by FGCU President Dr. Bill Merrin. Under the leadership of my dear friends and colleagues, Center Director Dr. Peter Corcoran and Associate Director Dr. Jim Walpart, the FGCU Center works towards its mission of realizing a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. One signature event of the Center for Environmental and Sustainability Education is the Rachel Carson Distinguished Lecture Series. Rachel Carson, the famed biologist, writer, and activist, is the inspiration of our center's work. Rachel Carson's contribution to human understanding of our environment is unparalleled. She exemplified environmental activism through promoting public policy based on sound science and ethics. Rachel Carson's writings encouraged me to become an ecologist and earth justice activist. We are now pleased to present Honoring Mother Earth's Indigenous Voices recording of Mr. Dumasani Nayoni's talk at Florida Gulf Coast University. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wontakwasin to all of our relations.
I'm Dumasani Nayoni. That's my first name and my last name. And I'm from Zimbabwe. And my tribes, I'm a mix of different tribes from Southern Africa. My tribe is very important, the Bene tribe, which are descendants of the Zulu and the Swati tribes that emigrated from the eastern part of Southern Africa up to what is now called Zimbabwe before someone came and decided to put boundaries and borders and said, you can't move anymore. And if you're going to move somewhere, you need a passport and a visa. So that's where the story of my tribe's migration as a whole stops. But obviously, we have to stop moving because I'm in the southern part of the United States at the moment. So life goes on. I'm from Bulawayo, that's the name of my city, which is in the southwestern part of Zimbabwe, and I studied psychology at Cambridge College. That's in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the Boston area. This is what Zimbabwe looks like today. I'm from the part called Matabele land. That's my province in the southwest. Harare is the capital. And to the north, we have Zambia. To the west, we have Botswana. South Africa is here below. Mozambique is to the right. So if you're ever looking for Zimbabwe, you can't find it, and you can find those other places where we're in that neighborhood. So I'm going to give a brief outline of what we'll cover today. First, we'll look at the global pressures around environmental issues and around human issues, and sort of have a brief introduction to it, and look at the times we're living in. What are some of the things that define the world we live in? We'll have a slight focus on Africa. Yes, I'm biased, I'm African. So I'm going to take you all to have a little glimpse of what it's like to look at global perspectives from the point of view of Africa. And briefly, we'll have a look at therefore what are the opportunities for local action and for us to act in a local capacity. So our time. So we stand at a critical time in Earth's history. You know, and we stand at a time when humanity must choose its future. Those are the inspirational words in the preamble of the Earth Charter that Peter spoke of. And so never before has the planet faced such blatant choices between going one way or the other. So we're at a crossroads. And for me, that crossroads is blatant, it's obvious, and for those who don't share it, I think there's some numbers and some statistics and some science that can back that up. So there's 6 billion people, at least, more, but there's 6 billion people on the planet at the moment, the most ever in the history of the planet. So imagine if we were all in the same room, and the number of people in this room kept increasing, and the size of the room is not. The size of the room is a constant. So that, for me, is a pretty scary figure. But by 2050, so in 45 years' time, there'll be 8.9 billion people in the same room, on the same planet. And by 2075, there'll be 9.2 billion people. So if you look at that growth rate, it's unbelievable how those numbers are going up and up and up. It's supposed to stabilize around 9 million for 300 years, but I'm not betting on it. And to put those numbers, I need to plug in my computer, apparently. One second. So to put those numbers into perspective, I added some zeros next to the billions. That means there's 6 billion people at the moment, and we're going to go to 9 billion over a 70-year time frame. That's a lot of growth, given that we need to create resources for all of those people. So this graph shows how this over 100 years, the population on the planet has grown. And unfortunately, the resources on the same planet don't grow that exponentially. Right? And so those projections are really a projection for disaster. The red line is looking at population growth, and the other line are looking at resources, such as natural resources, food per person. All of those are declining, but the number of people who need those resources are growing. And anybody who's done economics, the very first thing you learn about economics is it's about matching supply and demand. Right? It's about matching limited resources with unlimited wants and needs, which I don't really think is true. Somebody lied and said it's unlimited, but I think we can limit our appetite for some of the things that we consume, right? So my advice to you, don't believe chapter one of economics 101, which is our needs and our wants are unlimited. They can be limited, and I think that's not a bad thing, given the science and the numbers, and given the reality that we have. A few more numbers. So wealth disparity at the moment in the world we're living in, it's also the greatest it's ever been in history. On average, developed nations, right, so there's a bunch of countries that are classified or have classified themselves as developed or advanced or economically developed, like the United States, like Canada, like a lot of Western European countries or South Korea, they are 42 times richer than those that are considered to be poor. 42 times. So for every piece of wealth that they have, that they've generated, they're 42 times ahead of those other countries that are considered to be poorer. And the assets of the 3 richest people in the world exceed the combined gross domestic product of the poorest 48 countries, not people, countries. So we take 48 countries that are at the bottom of that pile, and we stand there next to Bill Gates, probably Warren Buffett, and I don't know who's number 3 now. Those 3 individuals have more wealth in their assets, more private planes, more golf courses, more money in their bank accounts, and 48 whole countries and economies that would bring together probably billions of people. So the wealth disparity, 1960, right, 20% of the world owns 70.2% of the resources or assets, and that shot up in 1989 to 82, And now, given the boom in the 1990s and all the money people made from the dot-com era, that scam is probably even more ticked. So, population is increasing, number of people living on the planet is increasing, the resources are going down, the gaps between those who have and those who don't have much are also increasing. Let's have a look at the United States. So, the United States consumes a lot of oil, a lot of food, a lot of water, and also wastes a lot of things that you don't eat. Look what goes in your garbage at the end of every week and you'll see how much waste there is in there. Stuff that's packaged and repackaged only to be packaged again and sold in. So, if you look at how much of the U.S. consumes in each one of those things, this is a graph that shows petroleum consumption by region, right? So, in Europe, there's a club or a group of countries known as OECD, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. So, in Europe, about 20-something countries consume that much fuel per day. So that's currently, if you look at the third bar, that's 2002 statistics, that's almost 15 barrels per day of oil in that group of countries. The U.S. alone is one country. Look how much that consumes. Almost 20 barrels of petroleum a day, and the rest of us are somewhere in between. So that's a huge disparity, because Europe has more people, more human beings living in it than the U.S. on the one side. China has way more people than the United States, almost three times the population. And as does South America and in Africa and all the other regions in the world. But the U.S. still far out consumes all of those regions. Let's look at the global consumption of oil, therefore, worldwide, per capita. The United States and Canada, per day, this is per individual, so each one of you here on average, people living in the United States, consumes just over 2.5 gallons per day of oil. In the stuff that you do, be it driving, taking a bus, taking a flight, computers that's made of petroleum or oil-based substances, and all sorts of things. It is all factored in. 2.5 gallons a day, each one of us, that's how much we consume. Look at the rest of the world, how much they use. I'm not saying the rest of the world should consume as much as we do, but look at that disparity and how the resources are therefore used. We can look at the total oil reserves. The Middle East has the first bar, the Middle East and the northern part of Africa. So if you go from Egypt all the way to Saudi Arabia and Iraq and what's called the Middle East. So they, at the moment, have about 70%, just over 70% of the world's total oil reserves. Look where North America is, 4%. So where do we go if we really need to find oil, to find the resources that we consume at the rates that we showed in the previous slide? It makes sense that we're going to go and try and either be brave with the guys in the Middle East or put guns to their heads and tell them we want what they have, right? So look at just looking at oil, don't worry about all the other resources on the planet. Just looking at oil, look at how they create this dynamic on the planet. Global affair, local action. Each one of us consumes 2.5 gallons a day, and that's some of the impacts that it has. We're going to look at grain. The rest of the world, look at how much grain they consume. This is, again, between 1995 and 1996, and those changes are probably still in place. Look at North America, that's Mexico, the United States, Canada, and how much in that same time period they consume. With increasing population and increasing appetite, those numbers just don't match. So there is an amazing disparity in how and how we consume the resources we have on the planet, and who has access to them based on who has the money or the wealth to buy them or to own them or to purchase them. And then we can go back to what I said initially about the numbers and how they're growing. How will this picture look in 50 years' time when there's 7 or 8 billion people on the planet? Water usage is the same. The developed countries consume way more water than the developing countries and the rest of the world, almost combined. So, the U.S. unfortunately isn't alone in consuming this much stuff. The rest of us who live out in the world, we consume. And there's an amazing occurrence in how the rest of the world is developing economically. And if you look at China, right, so the global, if you look at China, China, since 1978 has been what a lot of economists, again, call a miracle track of development, where the economy has been growing at about 9% a year. Since 1978. That's for over 20 years. 25 years of growth at 9%. So what they had last year, they would have 10% more in their assets. And so the rate of consumption in China is also spreading exponentially. much faster than anyone could have ever imagined 30 years ago. So on current trends, income per person in China at the moment today stands at $5,300, US dollars, each person in China. And therefore, if you look at into the future, at 8% growth, which is what China is growing at, roughly between 8 and 10%, doubling every 9 years. So if China keeps this up, China alone, the rest of us, we can stay put, but if China keeps this up, the income per person in 25 years will be at 38,000. That means that's how much money each Chinese person will have to spend. And that 38,000 figure is how much each American has per capita, roughly. So China in 25 years on current trend would have 1 billion people living at the current trend that 300 million Americans are living. Just if nothing changes, if everything keeps going on the same format. And go back to all the previous slides and factor those in at 1.5 billion Chinese doing exactly the same thing, consuming the same amount of stuff, wanting the same resources and having the same quote-unquote unlimited wants and needs. That's 1.45 billion people consuming that much and feeling as if they're entitled to spend $40,000 worth of money each year. So again, on current trends, China's grain consumption will go, each person in China at the moment, roughly, consumes 291 kilograms of grain each year per person. I don't know what that is in pounds, because we still use kilograms, but that's a lot. I think you multiply it by 2.2 and you get the same amount in pounds. Then in 25 years, each person in China will therefore consume what Americans consume at 935 per person a year. I don't know where this is all going to come from. In 2031, China would then consume that much, that was a million, 1,352 million kilograms of grain a year, the whole country, which is two-thirds of how much we harvested last year for the whole world. So all grain harvest last year, that amount, 66% of that will be consumed by China alone. And so those numbers cut across other areas, oil, water, grain, electricity and energy, oxygen, green, houses built. Those numbers will then cut across in all of those other sectors, just coming from China. So look how much pressure that's going to put on the system. And it gets better, because India's population in 2030 will be bigger than China. And India's economic growth is also around 5 or 6%, and India is also trying to grow on the same model of saying, let's all build up our economic engine. So at the same time China is at the point we've just passed, India is getting it, and the United States is not getting it backwards, and Western Europe is probably not wanting to give up any of their comforts either. So the economic growth based on this same model is going to lead to those results, but spread them around the world. So it's as if we're on this train that keeps requiring that we feed it with coal and more fuel, and we keep feeding it, and we keep feeding it, and we keep feeding it, and this train is heading dead towards us at some point, and we're not moving. And that's a scary sight, and I find it ironic that you have this huge train that says safety first. That's a very funny. And I don't know how we're going to achieve that safety when we keep feeding this train, this economic model, with a very unsustainable way of operating. So there'll be a scramble for resources. Everybody's going to want natural resources to fuel their trains of economic growth. The Chinese are trying to buy meat from Argentina, oil from Venezuela, and anywhere they can get it, because their train doesn't want to slow down. And the United States are trying to do the same thing. India is trying to do the same thing. And if the rest of us are supposed to follow this model, where is it all going to come from? So natural resources fuel this train. Human resources also fuel this train. You need human beings to work and do those things. This isn't anything new. It's not groundbreaking. This formula has been in place for a long time. Hundreds of years ago, Europe realized that it was growing. And this train was picking up speed and growing faster and faster and faster. And they said, well, we need to go find resources to make our economies grow. We need gold, we need timber, we need all sorts of things. So the Europeans, in all of their great wisdom, went to Africa. And they said, we're going to go to Africa and we'll get the resources we need. Right? And then there was a mad scramble for Africa and its resources. Someone came back and whispered, there's gold, lots of gold. There's diamonds, lots of diamonds. And you know what else? There's people. All of those natural resources and human resources, the Germans, the Brits, the Dutch, the Belgians, the French, Spanish, Portuguese, Italians, they all said, let's go to Africa and get it. And they didn't have maps that pointed to the rest of the world at the time. But now we do. You go online and you find a world map and you figure out where the resources are. What are you going to get them if you have the muscle and the money? Right? So they went and they got the natural resources they need, they got the human resources they need. So if anyone's done history, they know what that has done. And if anyone in here is African like I am, they know what that's done to people. So it's not abstract, it's not guessing and trying to see what will happen in the future. Now we're looking at history. Right? So we look at the projections of where we're going and the lessons that history has taught us that those models were worth. There's a quote that says insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. Right? So we know how to do this. We've done it before. People have suffered for it, some people have benefited from it. And we're doing it again. And so are we insane as a global family, as a global community to expect a different result? You know, people dug down deep in mines in Johannesburg digging gold and diamonds so that I can propose to my girlfriend whom I embarrassingly had on the screen for ages trying to figure this out. But, so, you know, I can be sitting in New York at a fine restaurant asking her to marry me. Someone's down in a mine shaft not seeing the light of day to make me happy and bring that moment smile and the myth that, you know, a diamond is forever and all of that should be maintained. So there's a lot of mind-boggling questions. Look at all of these pressures, right? There's the pressures of forms, the pressures of needs, the pressures of growth, and trying to sustain and maintain those patterns and formulas for growth. And currently, there's a lot of global things that people are talking about. You know, how do we grow democracy here and there? How do we make sure that the economy is run? How do we deal with the issues of globalization? So I'm going to pick a few things that will then lead us to the next segment of our discussion. Right, so one, this idea of spreading democracy and freedom, you're doing. I think it's great. Democracy and freedom are probably good things, depending on how we define them. But let's talk about spreading democracy and exporting. Right, everybody has to have democracy. Right, and I think that this can't be done. Spreading this democracy, which is based on a certain economic assumption. You can't have democracy if your economy doesn't run a certain way, or if your politics and your culture doesn't accommodate. So it's not an easy thing. It's not just about having people vote and you have democracy. A lot of things come with what democracy is. Democracy works in the United States in the way that it works because it has a machinery that supports it and a foundation that supports it. Everybody can take a plane and fly where they want and buy what they want and be what they want. I'm not saying those are bad things, but we have to understand that. So it can't be done. You can't spread democracy to the rest of the world without replicating the economic model. The two go hand in hand. And China switched and imported a new economic model, and it's growing on that economic model. The Chinese, I'm sure, are happier those who managed to cash in on that growth than they may have been before. I've never been to China, so I can't tell. But it's based on specific values. That economic model is based on specific values, right? So that if we were to take this model that we know requires a lot of inputs into that train, into that economic train, and round that up, if every country there, for China, India, and all the other 200 countries, embrace that model, that economic model, what does that mean in terms of the limited resources and the growing pressure of human beings wanting those needs? Is that the best model forward? Is the current way we're living, 2.5 gallons of gasoline per person per day around the world, is that sustainable? Can we make it work? Have we found any other ways that can do it better? I don't think we have, because we're still doing it in ways that aren't. So, it is the economy, stupid. Those of them are right? The economy affects how everything else runs. But I think I want to take that statement a step forward and say it's the economic system. Right? It's not just about growing the economy. What system and what tools are we going to use to grow our economies in ways that factor in those pressures, that factor in that growth, and that factor in the current world we live in, and not necessarily assuming that the world starts and stops in my backyard? If we're living in a global world, how do we have an economic system that helps to that doesn't keep the unfairness of the past centuries in place? That's a big challenge, and I think, especially for us that are younger in this room and are spending hours and hours looking at books and trying to study how this world works, these are questions that we need to figure out. No one else will figure them out for us. We can choose to just jump on the same train and keep traveling on that. Or we can choose to try and see how we can create a different model for being, a different model for our economics and for our living. So, I see on the horizon different battles coming. In the past, people scrambled for Africa and its resources. In the future, I think not just the Europeans, but everyone in the world will be fighting for water because there's a limited amount of fresh water. Growing numbers of people want to drink the same clean, fresh water. There's a limited amount of food that can be grown or that is being grown. People are going to keep fighting for that as well. And some of these battles are already begun. They may not be fought with guns and bombs all the time, but they're there. The tensions of how do we sort that out and how do we resolve battles for minerals. We want to build roads and skyscrapers and mansions and golf courses, and we want to build housing for all people. It requires a lot of minerals, which we don't all grow. So we need to figure out where we're going to find that from. There's also a battle for timber and for wood. So ask people who live in the Amazon. They see it every day. Every couple of years, their backyard gets smaller and smaller and smaller because the rest of us are consuming their timber at crazy rates. Ask the people who live in the Congo, where there's another huge rainforest there. Ask the people who live anywhere where there's lots of trees, where there once were trees and now there are trees no more. How has that happened? There's a battle for air. So how do we create clean air? Let's create an international treaty so that we can clean up our air. Some people say, no, it's not good for economy, we're not signing on to that. We're not cleaning more. Right? Our air is fine so far and we can't risk cleaning up your air because it will hurt the speed of our economic trade. So already in the global sphere, people are fighting to try and see how do we sort this out. And everybody's trying to protect their lives. Oil is another one. And I don't think I need to keep saying much more about oil, but it's huge. It drives a lot of what we see happening. You know, 87% of oil is used just for transportation alone, to get from A to B. You know, I'm going to buy a big SUV living in Manhattan. What do I need four-wheel transport in New York City? But they're there. What do I need four-wheel drive cars that guzzle gasoline for in South Beach in Miami? If everybody lives in the Sahara Desert or in rural parts of Africa, it may make sense. But on the freeways in Los Angeles, driving a car that's designed for the world that you're after, that's a kind of a... It doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute. And so the challenges are clear for me. Hunger, if population increases and food production doesn't increase as much or can't meet everybody's needs, hunger is a big problem. It's already a big problem today and will continue to be a big problem in the future. Disease is a big problem. You know, AIDS is ripping apart the African continent, ripping apart Asia, and it's spreading. You know, AIDS doesn't care if you say it needs a visa, it's coming after you if you can't figure out how to protect it. SARS, 3 years ago, scared the living lights out of the whole world because we all thought we were going to go. TB, the Ebola virus, malaria, all of these diseases, these are clear challenges that as a planet we need to try and figure out. How do we create livelihoods for people? For people to have a way to feed themselves, feed their loved ones, and do so the next year, and the year after, and the year after, and that those that come after it can also have a livelihood. How do we figure out the environmental challenges? How do we protect the environment? How do we rehabilitate the parts of the world we've messed up? And how do we conserve and preserve the great parts that we still have? So these are all amazing challenges that we need to figure out, I think, as a global community, problem that faces all of us, regardless of where we're from. How do we do it? How do we deal with all of these things that we've just seen, those numbers, those statistics, those economic principles?
We've learned to trust ourselves to what's in our hearts. We've learned to understand, share and give each other a hand. Most of all, we will look all of us are one. One ocean, one river, one mountain, one sea, one flower, one fruit, one plant, one tree.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinonwatakwisi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yatkidichi Native Center, write to Yatkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yatkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? is Mother Earth going to die? A better day. Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die?
From Aborigine singer-songwriter Johnny Huckle, that very special song, Is Mother Earth Going to Die? We also featured a round dance song from Spirit Sand Singers from Arbor Records CD's Champion Round Dance Songs. That particular song was entitled Morning Wind. Well, dear friends, I hope you appreciated today's presentation of Mr. Dumasani Nayoni, his talk at Florida Gulf Coast University's Environmental Challenges, Local Activism, and Global Affairs. That was part one of his presentation. Next week on Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices, we will share the remaining part two of his fine talk. That was hosted by Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environmental and Sustainability Education, a center that I'm proud to be a member of its Board of Advisors. We're going to conclude today's broadcast with Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah from her Silver Wave record CD, Covenant. This particular song is entitled, Help Us Be Peaceful. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, on Radio for Peace International and RadioForAll.net. Aho, kinoa wintakwesin. To all of our relations.